Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to another episode of the Daily French Wrap. I'm your host, Andrew Kiever, standing in for your usual host, Nicholas Lorimer, and I'm today joined by Herman Pretorius. Herman, how are you?
I'm cold, but well.
Same. We are also not having the most sunny weather in Cape Town. So let's get into it. Today we are talking about the minor clash over US minerals ban. We are also talking about Gondwana slamming top metros for their financial mismanagement and the proposal to put a minimum cost on the alcohol market. So let's start off by talking about the recent fallout between Minister Gwedimantash and Neil Froneman, who is, of course, the CEO of Sibanye-Stillwater. And this is after Neil backed the proposal to offer the US access to Africa's critical minerals. The proposal was first presented to President Cyril Ramaphosa ahead of his meeting with President Donald Trump earlier this year on the 21st of May. And it was pitched as a way to improve the strained relations that we currently have between us and the US. The problem, however, is that Minister Gwedimantash says that neither his department nor the Minerals Council of South Africa was consulted. In his own words, he said very bluntly that they didn't talk to us and there can be nothing about mining without our input. He also took a big issue with their tone. One phrase that was reportedly included in the proposal was to make minerals great again, which Minister Mantash said is not our language. And he said that they don't want a critical mineral strategy for the US. We want a cross-cutting strategy for everyone, whatever that means. We'll get into that in a minute. So I think this, Herman, touches on something underlying, perhaps a little bit of a deeper issue. The government and the private sector have been at odds for years over the direction of our mining policy. The industry has, whenever you talk to them, you always hear about red tape and policy uncertainty and the way it affects their business and their policy also in their companies. And we've seen on the government side that for the applications that was initiated since the 2023 financial year, there's roughly 2,500 applications that is left unprocessed by the government and the departments. So Froneman obviously disagrees, and he warns the minister that this inward approach of government will actually shut South Africa out of global investment flows. And especially in the eyes of the US, given that they've recently made all kinds of deals, including with Ukraine and Rwanda and the DRC, for some of these critical minerals that we know are important in South Africa's global supply chains. So I wonder, what's your take on this? How serious do you think this spat really is? And do you think it's an issue about who gets credit? Is there something deeper that we can take from this regarding the relationship between government and the private sector? What's your take?
Yeah, so I think I'm going to slightly disagree with you in the sense that I don't think that there's been too much tension between government and the private sector over the direction of mining for too long. If there is tension, it's over the last decade, where previously we can see that the mining industry, to a very significant extent, dug its own grave with the mining charter, with participating in the ANC government's creation of the mining charter, very much sort of falling into the trap that a seat at the table is the same as influence over the ANC, missing, of course, the fact that the ANC is a heavy, ideologically based organization, not pragmatic, doesn't care about the bottom line. And this is something that I think business people quite often just fundamentally miss about the ANC, is that it's an ideological organization. It was an aberration under Mandela and Mbeki to have sort of liberal market pragmatism in economic policy. Fundamentally, this is an organization that approaches reality from the perspective of its beliefs and assumptions, not approaching its beliefs and assumptions from the perspective of reality. So we have the example of the mining charter wreaking havoc, the first edition, at least, and the second edition going through its own difficulties. So I'm very, very glad that we have bold and courageous people like Neil Frohman speaking out from the mining sector. I'm sad that 2 decades ago there weren't more Neil Frohmans able to see the facts for what they are, or what they were then. Perhaps South Africa's mining output collapse could have been averted over the last 20 years. But what I also see in this spat is political panic from the ANC. This behavior from Minister Mantashe is petty. It is childish. And it is clearly indicative of a weakness. This isn't how strong governments or strong political parties with a firm control behave. This is clearly a party in deep trouble, in deep concern. Minister Mantashe knows that. And it is, perhaps one can cut him some slack after all, that this is a minister who has failed so fundamentally in his portfolio that another ministry had to be created alongside his ministry to cope with, you know, the load shedding supply chain. So perhaps he's a bit sore and sensitive about being cut out of stuff, because even the president cut him out of the whole idea of, you know, let's create the Ministry for Electricity in the presidency with Hosi Enhle Ramaphosa. It's sort of like having a minister for finance and a minister for money, because the minister for finance can't do his job. So perhaps Gwede is a bit touched on his studio. But politically, it's indicative of an ANC in a crisis of confidence, and rightly so. But I think also therein lies an opportunity, and I'm glad that we see this spat. We need more spats like this, because this would be an indicator of market forces rather than ideological forces determining the route forward for our engagements with the rest of the world. Neil Frohman couldn't care less about ideology. He's a businessman. He cares about his bottom line and the success of his business. Now, that, of course, perhaps assumes some ideological components, but certainly if we are in a position where the ANC is becoming a 35% party, and we are in the position where business feel the type of confidence to circumnavigate, perhaps is an appropriate word to describe moving around Minister Mantashe, to circumnavigate or circumvent the minister in trying to directly influence policy and economic circumstances, I think that's good. An economy shouldn't be a political tool. It should be a tool of trade, of participation, of investment, of return on investment. So more spats, please. More spats like this. More business people simply ignoring the fact that they are political gatekeepers trying to retain control over South Africa's stuttering economy. So all power to the Neil Frohmans of the world. Let's have spat a day. Keeps perhaps the NDR at bay.
That's brilliant. Well, I wonder if our next story can perhaps also tell a story about political pressure, and whether it's actual reform or just political pressure. So our next story is about how 5 of our biggest metros have now been put on notice by Treasury. And this is because they have been racking up billions in unauthorized and irregular and wasteful spending. And we are, of course, talking about Joburg, Tshwane, Nelson Mandela Bay, Buffalo City, and Mangaung, where between these 5, the chaos is essentially so bad that Finance Minister Enoch Godongwana is threatening to pull the plug on funding transfers unless they actually clear up their act. They have been given until August the 13th, which is next week, to respond with, firstly, the reasons for their failure to comply with the Municipal Finance Management Act, and what, secondly, to say how they propose that they will actually take accountability and hold officials to account for these spending failures. So to give you a little bit of an idea, Tshwane blew more than 5 billion rand essentially last year in either some differentiation between unauthorized expenditure, irregular, and fruitless and wasteful. Between Tshwane and Nelson Mandela Bay in Johannesburg, they fail to make, and this is so, I found it remarkable. They fail to make the proper budget provisions for the, obviously your assets decline, your infrastructure has wear and tear, it ages. And they fail to account for this. This and the fact that some of their consumers that owe them debt won't be able to recover those funds. So because of this, they were then had some unplanned funding and they weren't able to maintain and actually keep up with some of this infrastructure failures. Then Johannesburg specifically has like 13 billion rand in irregular spending, Buffalo City as well. And then we have some of these mayors saying that they haven't even seen the letters that Minister Gorongwana now wrote to them. So Herman, I wonder how on earth did we end up in a position where cities can't account for billions? We have basic governance falling apart. And the best excuse, and on top of all of this, we have mayors saying that we didn't get the letter. We didn't get the mail. And I wonder, on top of that, do you think that we'll see Treasury follow through? What on earth do we expect if they do follow through? Because then there's no funding. And to take it back to this political pressure point, do you think it's actual reform or do you think it's political pressure that's forcing Treasury to take in such a tough stance?
So as we've sometimes discussed internally, Treasury is perhaps the most functional governmental department, has always been that way. Probably the reason that finance and economics and data analysis and all the good stuff that goes into making Treasury function is a filter for the type of quality of civil servant that you can attract to occupy Treasury. I mean, if you think about the sort of skills, the basic skills that you need to move into Treasury, it really is quite high quality human capital. And secondly, Treasury doesn't have essentially much of a budget itself. It is a relatively small department in terms of what it spends and who it employs. So it isn't very attractive for anyone trying to become part of the patronage network. There isn't a great amount of procurement tenders and contracts and sweetheart deals going through Treasury. They don't procure at a level, at a comparable level in terms of other government departments. So it doesn't attract the Gansvatters in a way. And I think those pressures ensure that a dose of reality remains consistent within the National Treasury, in the sense that we see fiscal prudence, and we can even look back to Tito Mboweni warning his party in Parliament about explaining to ANC backbenchers what a sovereign debt crisis is and how dangerous it is and how close South Africa is veering to it. So I think Treasury is one of the last vestiges of perhaps, you know, people associated with the ANC with some sense. And I have a lot of time for both deputy ministers there as well. Masondo and Sarupen, I think, are impressive characters. I don't always agree with them on everything, but, you know, they are certainly serious people. So the pressure coming on this from Treasury is, I think, a combination of insight into the fact that that the government is running out of money and that it is primarily a problem of expenditure and not of revenue. As our colleague Gabriel Kranza has exposed in his Blueprint for Growth papers earlier this year and last year, South Africa doesn't really have a revenue crisis. We have a spending crisis. At this stage, we can still generate enough revenue to cover our basic functions as state. It's wasteful spending. It's sort of unproductive spending. That's really the problem that's costing us dearly in terms of, you know, the BEE tax, BEE procurement premiums, the billions of rands going missing there. So I'm glad that the Minister of Finance is applying this pressure. No one else can apply this pressure. And something that is worth perhaps appreciating for a second is that the local government system in South Africa is set up in such a way that it really doesn't require more than managerial competence, if I can put it that way. Our cities and the way they are structured in terms of where they get their money from and what responsibilities they have, it's not an ideologically rich environment, really. A managerialist, socialist, capitalist, or middle of the road mayor could be equally successful within the system, because it really is, in a sense, just a question of receiving money and approving its spending, receiving money, approving its spending, and making sure that the spending is allocated down properly. Now, you can be a socialist and believe in proper spending, proper government spending. You can be a capitalist and believe in proper government spending. So it's not really an ideological problem. It is a problem of human capital. It's sort of the contrast of Treasury, where Treasury has, despite all pressures, attracted talent. Local government hasn't. Our local government level of politics, state of politics, caliber of politicians, falls far behind what should be expected in terms of cities and municipalities in this level of crisis. And as a resident of Pretoria, the Tshwane Metro's situation is perhaps especially depressing, because the city was in the financial black, then was subject to an 8 months illegal administrative order that was reversed by the Constitutional Court. When the administrative takeover was rescinded, the city was a few billion in the red. Then the coalition of Silje Brink started righting the ship. The indicators turned positive. The Auditor General indicated, Salga indicated, Treasury said, yes, Tshwane's finances are turning positive. And now this. It is such a reflection of the fact that at the end of the day, local government, more than anything else, is about basic competence. And as we prepare for the local government elections, my word, if there's any call I can make on South Africans, it is to pressure your parties to send their best. We sit in a situation where I think too many skilled people are in parliament, too many talented people aren't even interested in local government. I'm very excited that we could perhaps see that change, because at the end of the day, local government is about just good old competence. And these cities, if you're asking what's behind these lost billions, well, it's sadly good old incompetence.
Yeah, I think one example that came out of the story of that particular just basic incompetence is the fact that Buffalo City Metro failed to essentially appoint an engineer for 7 years. Engineers are so important. And even just that basic accounting error that they essentially did by not accounting for basic degradation. Anyhow, let's have a quick look at our last story. And this one is one that might make your beer a little bit either more expensive or, depending on where you buy it, a little bit more dodgy. So South African Breweries isn't especially thrilled about Treasury's latest idea, which is to put a minimum price on alcohol. Richard Rivett Karnak, who is South African Breweries' CEO, he really didn't hold back, and I quote, this is his words, "Any pricing tool that significantly increases alcohol costs risk pushing constrained consumers further towards illicit options." I think that's quite clear. As government has done in many other cases, they again propose another restriction, another regulation, and they do it in the name of curbing what they say is abuse in this case, and in the name of protecting public health, and in the name of what is better for us as citizens. So yeah, I'll admit, I was quite shocked by the fact that nearly 60% of South Africans binge drink. That is quite a lot. And it is apparently one of the highest in the world, according to the World Health Organization. So it's a startling stat. But it's this kind of policy that really risks pushing people towards, yes, the illicit market, but also businesses out of the South African economy. I think it's true that, as the CEO said, that the alcohol market is still incredibly important for the economy. It creates jobs and it creates trade. And for an economy that we want to grow, who has not has had growth, we need the economy to and business to actually have freer trade and to be able to trade amongst each other. So I'm wondering, what's your take on specifically the CEO's comment, which is that it's bad for jobs, it's bad for tax revenue, and it's bad for public health. And how much of this do you think is actually about protecting the public, and how much of it's just about a little bit more control for government? And through that way, it's actually not the good for us, but just bad at the end of the day.
Yes. This is a particularly interesting phenomenon, given how recent COVID is. I think we all remember the when people zol, they put saliva on their paper. And then we remember the crackdown on cigarettes and tobacco products, retrospectively and at the time, an insane idea. I mean, the mere notion that banning tobacco sales might help fight coronavirus, insane. But we saw a perfect case study of what happens on substance crackdown, legal substance crackdown. People, I don't know of anyone who stopped smoking during COVID, but I know of many people who just got illicit cigarettes. And these are generally decent people. These aren't criminals. These aren't people who sort of revel in the gutters of the underworld. These are people who just sort of decided they want to smoke. They are adults. They are allowed to legally smoke. Why on earth wouldn't they smoke? And they smoke. So the crackdown on the tobacco trade created an illegal tobacco trade that I think persists to this day, but I haven't looked at the data. So the reality is, we will see a similar picture emerging. The SAB boss is absolutely right that you can't change human nature by changing the pricing of items, because prices synthetically manipulated give way to black markets. That's simply the fact of economic gravity. However, and this is awkward for a classic liberal to admit, I have seen the damage done to communities, especially poorer communities, by alcohol abuse, by substance abuse, and more recently, the issue of gambling has come up. I am not an interventionist. I think free markets are free markets are healthy. And free markets contain risk, and they contain bad decisions. And one can be socialistic, sort of socially Darwinistic, and say, well, you know, if people are going to drink themselves to oblivion, let them. The problem is, I don't think that gets us anywhere in South Africa. I'm not pro-intervention as a rule, but on alcohol, I can understand the pressures. I spoke to doctors, ER doctors specifically, who during the COVID lockdowns, when alcohol sales and travel was locked down, they actually could see a difference in their operational output compared to the massive amount of injuries, violence, car crashes that just result from alcohol use and alcohol abuse. We aren't a country with the ability to tolerate moderate consumption of alcohol. Now, that doesn't mean every alcohol drinker is bad, but I think there is a larger question to ask. And perhaps this is the wrong answer, but there is a larger question to ask in terms of, we have communities generationally starved of the opportunity not to be dominated by alcohol abuse, especially poor rural communities. is there something that the state could do differently to disincentivize the type of abuse we see? I don't think pushing up the minimum price for alcohol is the way to go. But if that is the reason behind it, I think it's a reason that reasonable people can agree is a conversation worth having. But sadly, on this, it's a blunt instrument that'll achieve a blunt outcome. It won't cut down on consumption. It'll just boost illegal consumption, I'm afraid.
No. Okay, well, that's all we have time for today. As Nicholas always says, I hope you found the show interesting, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Daily French Show. Cheers, everyone. Have a wonderful day.
The Daily French Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.